This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to 2022 with us here on the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where I'd very much like to say I hope you've had an enjoyable festive period, though I am aware that for some of you, that involved absolutely no football. Just half the games from the Sky Bet Championship and Sky Bet League One were played across the three scheduled rounds of fixtures, and in Sky Bet League 2, just over a third. We'll reflect on the topsy-turvy nature of trying to prepare for football matches that might not even take place, with a manager whose team are currently on course to have played just once in the league in 6 weeks.
And it does feel like we're starting again, having not been able to do the preparation we would have done if we'd have known we'd have had this big layoff.
And we'll be joined by another whose team have had a mesmeric turnaround in their form.
The question you haven't asked, what have you done differently in the last 2 months to what we did in the 2 months previous? And it's nothing.
On the official EFL podcast. It's so far so good for the new Sheffield United manager Paul Heckingbottom, who has a 100% record since retaking the reins at Bramall Lane and lost. Sadly, from his point of view, had he maintained that form, his team would by now be in the Sky Bet Championship playoff places, having had four games postponed due to COVID since he signed his 4.5-year contract on the 25th of November, including those with Preston, with Hull City and Middlesbrough scheduled in and around Christmas and the New Year. And I suppose the thing is, Paul, that had you known you weren't going to be playing over Christmas, you'd have managed the players in a completely different way, presumably, i.e. give them a bit of a rest and then bring them back for a little mini pre-season.
Yeah, that's been the most... It's disappointing when you're in good form to get games called off, but the most frustrating thing for me, and I think the players, has been the preparation for games sort of every 3 days and then getting them called off last minute. So you're not putting them through the paces, which you would do if you had all that time off. So that's been frustrating, and you feel as if you're falling behind a little bit, but we've managed to catch up a little bit this week, and hopefully after this cup game against Wolves, we can just continue playing, but then that'll pose different problems. I think we've worked out already that we'll have 24 games in the last 12 weeks, and there's an international break in there as well. So we're going to be busy, that is for sure.
Yeah, and the missus, of course, must be absolutely sick to the back teeth of seeing you, having you at home on those magical Christmas days when you're normally like freezing cold at the side of a pitch somewhere.
Yeah, you get used to Christmas being different and New Year and things like that. So, yeah, we ended up having Christmas Day off, although we're back in training then Boxing Day instead of playing. Same New Year, we ended up having New Year's Day off and then came in the day after. So it has been messy and difficult, but the players have been fantastic, you know, because no one's as frustrated as a player, especially when you're performing well and playing well and you're looking forward to the next game. And then through no fault of our own, and we've been making a few sacrifices to try and make sure that we can keep the squad healthy enough, and we're still getting games called off. So it has been frustrating for everyone, definitely.
Yeah, I got to ask you where the adrenaline goes, because I assume, like any big event in anybody's life, any of the listeners to this who've maybe got, I don't know, a big piece of work coming up or a job interview or whatever, you must build up towards match day. So when that adrenaline doesn't get released in actual football performance, where does it go? How do you manage that side of yourself, of the staff, of the players?
Yeah, listen, I know I certainly got a bit moodier, definitely. I've got some staff around me who know me well enough to see that as well and sort of pull me up on that, which is good. Players can get a bit moodier, a bit maungier, a bit rattier. So yeah, we can manage that in training. You prepare for it, you do conversations, you talk about it, try and take the frustrations out on the next opponent, that type of thing. However, we've never had a next opponent and it did build up. So we tried to draw a line in it and start afresh after the New Year's game got called off against Borough and just switch the focus now to the FA Cup. So that's probably helped, the fact it's a different competition, the fact that we're going away to a big Premier League team who are performing really, really well. Just changes the focus, and I think it gets everyone back on track.
Yeah, but I'm guessing certainly in your time in management, probably in modern management, there's never been a period where a manager has to be so flexible, knowing, I guess, that at the very last minute, as you've experienced with the opposition players or teams, Paul, but I guess it could be your own as well. You can make plans, but you have to be prepared to change them at the very last.
Yeah, and I've just literally been speaking about that with the staff now about our preparation for this game. We've got a couple of COVID issues now, which has changed it. And I can't see us getting through between now and Sunday without a couple more. So, yeah, you certainly need to be flexible and adapt and have a few teams up your sleeve, because that positive COVID test can come at any point, as we've seen. You know, we've had games called off, but we really want this game on. We really want to put a team out and play, and we want to make sure that everyone's fit and available. But you never know, like say, who's going to get that positive result, which none of us want, but we have to be realistic enough to understand that it might happen.
Yeah, I mentioned the momentum you got, 3 consecutive wins under you, 4 consecutive for the club. I mean, that must be painful as well, isn't it? Because, you know, when you came in, I was just looking through some of the things you said. You talked about reviving confidence, wanting the consistency, getting rid of that relegation hangover. So you're micro steps, I know, but you're starting that ball rolling and then it gets interrupted like this.
Yeah, so from my point of view, that's been the worst thing, the most frustrating thing. I'd have loved to have played that game straight after Fulham. The way we won at Fulham was different, but we showed a lot of qualities that are necessary if we want to climb up that league. So, yeah, it would have been great to play that next game and keep that momentum. And it does feel like we're starting again, without a doubt. And starting again, having not been able to do the preparation we would have done if we'd have known we'd have had this big layoff, as you said early on. So it's all obstacles we have to overcome. And one thing that I always say to players and we have to now act it out is no excuses. So regardless what's gone on, regardless how the hand we've been dealt, we've got to perform. And that starts with Wolves. And then, as I said, that'll start with that schedule then of 24 league games in 12 weeks, which, you know, it'll just mean more opportunity for more players. And we're adamant that that's fine, we'll deal with it.
Paul, you obviously got the job in the aftermath of Chris Wilder's departure for the end of the Premier League season. How close were you to getting it in the summer, if you don't mind me asking? Were you interviewed for it in the summer?
No, I was never really contemplating it. Listen, in all honesty, everyone who knows me, and it's a huge club. I've loved it here since I came in, and it would have been very difficult to say no if I'd have got asked to do it. But I was enjoying what I was doing. Chris brought me into a different role, and I was enjoying that. And I wanted to make sure that I had that position, because that's what I came here to do. So
we better just explain that was the under-23s job, just for anybody that didn't realise. Yeah,
it was the under-23s. And then I was adamant that I wanted that role secure. So I was happy to step up for the last 3 months of the Premier League season. But I wanted to have that role for me, because I was enjoying it. Yeah, that's as far as it went with me. And I think the club sort of appreciated that from me and the fact I helped out. And yeah, but it was different this time. It was, the club understood that it was a different approach from them. The club understood the way and my thoughts on the club as it has been even from last season. And we probably already had that line of communication from me stepping up and helping out last season. So, as I said, you can't say no. It's a difficult one to say no to. It would have been, but this time it's a different feel. We're in a different league. I also know the players, and the players know me, so I felt like the players would respond well. And I just think there's still more to do this season. I know there was a lot of talk about long term with the club and planning and making sure that better decisions are made for the long term future of the club. Get that, and I agree with it totally. However, the nature of this, the league this season, the Championship, and the squad that I think we've got, then this season's not a write-off. You know, I still think we're well and truly in the mix. Well, again, we may have had something else thrown at us with COVID and the cancellations of games, but it doesn't change my belief that we can still be a force this season and hopefully get challenging up near the top.
Yeah. I mean, the club talked when they sort of appointed you in November about your style and your ethos. What is it? Why is it so aligned to the values of Sheffield United?
Well, I think first and foremost, and one of the reasons I enjoyed the job I was doing there, we had some good young talent and some good staff, and we ended up getting 9 debuts in 11 months, you know, from really pushing the young players very hard and showing what can be achieved if you're willing to work and push. And obviously, with that, owners generally see then the value in young players, and if you're turning bids down or there's interest in young talent, it shows a value of a well-run academy, if you like, and some good young talent. And that does align with long-term thinking in a football club. So that's going to be important going forward, that we can continue pushing the academy, and the academy staff understand that they need to keep producing young players. I've never been shy in putting young players in the team if I think they're good enough, and I'd continue to do that. And then also, I think probably the way we finished the season in the Premier League and the way we tried to play, and the fans responded very well to it in terms of let's be exciting, let's be aggressive, and let's take risks and chances. It's an entertainment business, and just like the fans, I want to be stood on the side seeing a team that represents me and the way I want to play. So it's probably those things. Because then if you are getting that and you're developing players, that's how you can make your money to reinvest in the squad and the facilities and the infrastructure of a football club. So that's probably the alignment right there. Okay. It sounds easy when we chat about it though, Clem, doesn't it? But getting it over the line and making it work, it takes a lot. It takes a
lot. Yeah. I mean, I've loved sort of following your journey. Obviously, there have been challenges along the way. You know, that amazing period as caretaker of Barnsley with the promotion from League One to the Championship and winning the Football League Trophy. I mean, obviously, you took the chance in going to Leeds and then followed on the period up in Scotland as well. How do you view your career and the route you took? And despite the challenges, how much of a benefit do you think it might be in the longer term to have had those couple of punches in the stomach?
It's been a great ride, great journey. The football's the easy bit, the players, I always say it. And I was never trying to be a manager. That's the reason I didn't take the Barnsley job for so long. But again, it's difficult not to. You're getting promoted to the Championship, and I do enjoy it. I love it. But I wouldn't do it at all costs. You know, there's more important things to me than being a football manager. But I'd say to anyone, you just mentioned one of my mates earlier, anyone who gets a chance to do it, I think you've got to do it, because there's nothing like it. And you learn a hell of a lot about yourself, and you get better at anything you want to do afterwards. If you're willing to learn from things you get right and wrong, because you aren't half going to learn about yourself and the situations you find yourself. So, yeah, that's what I like about the job. In terms of what I've learned from it, I think the biggest thing has been that all these clubs, I've gone through takeovers, I've gone through losing owners to ill health and different ownership groups that span all over the world. And that's the biggest thing. You've got to be able to manage and cope in all these different situations. But as I said before, the football doesn't change. So it's probably your management skills and communication skills that become more important. I think if you're clear on your football, as I said, that won't change. Getting a message across to players, players are easy. But then the other things that come with a job are different to every football club, totally different. And you have to be able to adapt to that, because no matter what anyone says, people think you're just judged on the grass, and you will be in terms of results. It'll cost you your job or not. But internally, there's a lot more things affect your job that you're probably not in control of, but you're still judged on everything. And that's probably the biggest skill you can have as a football manager, understanding that you'll be judged on 100% of things, that you'll be in control of 40-50% of them, you know, and getting your head around that's tough.
Yeah. I guess I asked the question because, you know, you talked about, you know, selecting the youngsters and playing the right brand of football and things. And I just wondered if you've been in challenging situations a few times, but bounced back and been respected to take the club over as you have now and things, whether it kind of accentuated your freedom of attitude. Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, listen, I know people who had bad experiences being a football manager. It takes a toll, definitely. But one thing I have always been able to do, I think, is put it in perspective. I love it, love doing it. And I've always been open that I would do it again. However, it's not the most important thing in my life. It is on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. If anyone gets in my way, then of course it is, but it's not. It really isn't. You know, when I go home to the family and that, and all my family at home, and you're just dad, and you get treated the same way as every other dad, you know, and If your ambition in my ambition in life is to be the best dad I can be, not the best football manager I can be, that become but that's part of it, isn't it? Being successful at your job, giving everything, and yeah, I think having that perspective helps you to do it. But the biggest thing is, I think, just trying to be good at it and learn where. Try and be better at where you failed before. I know my communication upwards has not always been fantastic. My stubbornness and how I react to certain situations have probably been to the detriment some moment in time, you know? But I can't change everything about myself, and I know sometimes I'll get it wrong. But again, I think people have to understand me, and I've got to help other people understand me as much as I've got to understand them. And that's the biggest thing about the job. But in terms of... Yeah, I'm trying to describe football management in loads of different ways other than football, aren't I? But that is what it is. It's everything. It's everything. You've got to be everything to everyone in whichever way you think is going to help us be successful.
Yeah. You've always gone your own route, though, haven't you? You know, you did your sports coaching degree and then master's as well at what's now Leeds Beckett Uni and things. Yeah. So you went that slightly... should we call it an unorthodox route compared to what most people
do? It was always supplementary, really. It was, I just got value in it from doing it, and I'm actually doing my doctorate now as well. So it's
wow.
It's something.
Does that mean
I'm
going to have to curtsy when I see you in future?
Yeah, you are. No one else but you are. Yeah.
You're doing your doctorate.
Yeah. Well, it's on the back burner. Football management again. Bits to help me, but also bits to feed back into the game, into the LMA, the FA, the Premier League, you know, in terms of the people who want to educate. Modern day football management is different. The skill set is unique. And I think the biggest challenge is understanding yourself, like saying how you fit in and how you're going to be successful in it, rather than copying someone. So, yeah, listen, it's changed now. When I've stepped back up into doing the job, it's going to be difficult. It's going to take longer, but I enjoy that part of it. It gives me a different... group of people to speak to work with, different group of people to question me. And ultimately, like I said, if I'm comfortable around the players and the staff, then I need to get better and more comfortable around other types of people who are all involved in football. And that only helps, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you inherited a team that still has a lot of the players that just went on that incredible run under one of your predecessors, Chris Wilder. I mean, football's cyclical as well, isn't it? You know, sometimes a team reaches the end of its shelf life, etc. One thing really stood out to me when you were appointed, which was you talked about potentially in January it was more important to remove unmotivated players than necessarily bringing new players in. So just on the subject of communication, what you've learned, the skills you've got from elsewhere, has that been a rather... nice conundrum for you to try and get in the minds of some of those guys who may not want to be with you, may not be fully clicking in accordance to the club's values?
Yeah, and that's always the big part of the job, the man management. And again, yeah, a bit I enjoy, a bit I like. And you go back to when I was playing, I think it's right in all walks of life, just a bit of honesty and clarity in what's expected, help. So we want a challenging environment, but we want to help players achieve, so the help's got to be there for the players. But then I think if you're giving them all that time, energy and effort, you can actually expect some of that back as well. And then when you don't see that back or it's not getting produced back, then they're probably answering the questions for you, you know? And then it is a different type of conversation. But the footballers are easy. They want to play. Not everyone can play. You can only play 11 players, you know? But so then they just want that honesty and that clarity. Where do they stand? What's the role for them in this squad and to try and help success? So, yeah, I think that's a big part of the man management. And yeah. if you are top heavy in certain positions or you've got an imbalance in your squad, it makes it harder for a lot of players to get that game time. And that's when players can become a problem or can become demotivated when, even though they are giving their best, it's not quite enough to get in the team. So that's where decisions would be made in January.
Yeah. Of course, as you say, with this huge schedule, half a season to be crammed into, what did we say, about three and a half, 4 months maximum?
Yeah, it'll be the first
you're
weekend.
You're going to need a big squad, aren't you?
Yeah, first weekend in May, it's over, and our next league game's the 15th of January. So, yeah, it's going to be a squeeze. We know it's going to be hard work. But we've got the squad to deal with it. And as I said, we've got players. I think the squad's great. They've, they're training really hard, working really hard. And if we are producing that type of effort and energy, then people will get game time, because players won't be playing 90 minutes of that type of schedule at the best every single game. So we need to be able to freshen it up. We need to be able to give opportunity and make sure that everyone plays a part.
Yeah. You said you'd become Mr. Grumpy, but you also said you love being at home with the family. What do they do with you if Mr. Grumpy comes back through the door? How do they treat you?
Yeah, they soon get me out of it. Like I said, there's no excuses for the players at work. There's no excuses for me at home, definitely.
On behalf of the whole family, try and get a few games on and get out of the house a bit, will you, mate?
No problem.
Great to talk to you, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
No Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend, of course, with all the teams, well, let's just call it, hoping to be involved in the third round of the FA Cup. But there are a couple of rescheduled games midweek next week. Tuesday night, Reading entertain Fulham, who've dropped to third because they didn't play at all over the festive period either. And Barnsley, Paul Heckingbottom's former club, only two wins all season. They entertain Stoke off the field. Several of the promotion hopefuls have been adding to their striking ranks. West Brom have brought in the USA international Daryl Dike from Orlando City. He's got 9 goals in 19 appearances for Valerie and Ishmael on loan at Barnsley last season. Middlesbrough signed the Republic of Ireland's Aaron Connolly on loan from Brighton, and Nottingham Forest have done the same with Aston Villa's Keenan Davis. At the other end of the pitch, Forest have also ended Steve Cook's decade-long association with Bournemouth. He signed at the City Ground until 2024. Meanwhile, Nathan Jones' new contract as manager of Luton Town will keep him at Kenilworth Road until 2027.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Into Sky Bet League One, where Rotherham United's 21-match unbeaten one was finally ended by Accrington Stanley on Boxing Day. That was the game where John Coleman celebrated 20 years in charge at the Crown Ground across his two spells. And Bolton Wanderers' New Year's Day signing from Stanley, the Northern Ireland international Dion Charles, has apologised for deeply offensive historic social media posts. His new club have condemned the content as unacceptable. Quite a lot of fixtures in Sky Bet League One this coming weekend, including fourth place, second, that's Wickham entertaining Sunderland, and the bottom club Doncaster Rovers. Gary McSheffrey confirmed as their permanent manager entertain Fleetwood, who are 20th. And there are also some fixtures midweek. And there's one obvious one that stands out. You'd probably be able to spot it even if I didn't tell you it, but let's just say MK Dons are playing Wimbledon. Into Sky Bet League 2, and anywhere in English football this season, has there been more curious form than that of Mansfield Town? Promotion favourites in the close season, between the middle of August and the end of October, they went 14 games in all competitions without a win. I don't know what's happened since then, but they've subsequently managed 10 wins in their last 11. Let's ask their manager, Nigel Clough. Do you want to offer me some sort of explanation for this, Nigel?
No, there isn't. It's remarkably simplistic. We right. started the season brilliantly. We won the first two. We went down to Colchester. We were 1-0 up, and we conceded a penalty in the 93rd minute, which was extremely harsh, to say the least. We then went to Swindon on the Saturday. We ended up with 17 shots, lost 1-0. And everything went downhill from there. And then we lost some key players. Usual accumulation of things, of decisions and injuries and so on, a break when you need it. And we just find ourselves in a downward spiral very, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, you've been around football all your life. You're very experienced yourself. Have you ever known anything like that? And can you, I mean, I will take you to the nice bits of this chat, Nige, but That sort of desperation to find a solution, and the hole just seems to get deeper and deeper. Is it your first time that where it went that deep?
Probably, yes. And first time where we'd ever faced such a raft of things going against us all at one time, all in one period. From everything that could have gone against us, went against us. And it was one of those where I think the best part of it was the supporters really stuck with us in that time. They applauded us off the pitch at times when we hadn't won. And I think they genuinely recognised that we weren't far away. And then all of a sudden you get one little result at home to Tranmere, which turned out to be a big result. And from there, to get 10 wins out of 11, from going that to 14 without a win, to actually win 10 out of 11, is quite remarkable.
When you're in that situation, how hard is it to stick to your established principles and not kind of deviate and go off in a direction that you haven't wanted to or needed to before?
I think that's where the experience helps, in terms of when we've had those runs before. And certainly we look back at the second season of the Championship with Burton, and we lost our main man at the start of the season with a cruciate ligament injury. And then we started chopping and changing, and you're just desperate looking at the next game. Can we get a point? And when I look back at that now, I wish we'd have said, no, we're going to stick with our principles. And I was talking to, I've talked to other managers about it as well, one or two. Paul Warne in the same situation last season, where he went to the last day at Rotherham and it went against him. They were safe with, five, 10 minutes to go. We were safe with 3 minutes to go in the Championship. So you look back on those times, you think, right, what did we do? And we said, no, we're going to stick with what we're doing. And it's remarkable, the question you haven't asked, what did you do differently, which you have done. But that's what everybody asks you. What have you done differently in the last 2 months to what we did in the 2 months previous? And it's nothing. It's just we have different players available. That is it, really. And a bit of confidence coming from the games.
Yeah. Just to be absolutely clear with you, Nigel, these normal podcasts last between about 30 and 40 minutes. We've already had a very good chat with Paul Heckingbottom, but I was hoping to get a good 15 out of you. So I thought I won't burn the obvious question straight away. We'll have a gentle meander towards the what have you done?
Yeah, into the depths of despair that we experienced just a couple of months ago. Meander down.
Yeah, and I know you guys like to go, it's gone, it's in the past and things, but just on face value, I mean, because I know you and have been lucky enough to do this many, many times with you, the longer it went on, I was kind of looking through my fingers at the results on your behalf. The Radfords are obviously experienced in business, it's the club owners, but they're also very ambitious. Were you starting to get worried? Were you starting to fear?
Course. Yeah, of course. We went to, we probably hit our rock bottom. We went to Northampton, lost 2-0, and we were absolute rubbish on the day. And it's the only game, I would think, within that run where you could say we didn't have a chance of getting and didn't probably deserve anything from the game. And there was a lot of, I think, disquiet after that game from supporters for the first time. And then we played Port Vale at home on the Tuesday night. We were in the top three at the time, and we were absolutely brilliant. We missed a penalty. We ended up drawing 1-1. Daryl Clark said, he felt as though he'd nicked a point, stolen a point from us that night. Crowd gave us a standing ovation when we left the pitch. And then we went to Extra on the Saturday, 1-0 up with 20 minutes to go. Lost 2-1 with a couple of youngsters on the pitch. And I had a very nice message from the owners on the Sunday morning of support. And I actually phoned him back. They were in Portugal at the time, and spoke to him and just told him how much I appreciated it. We won the next week and we went from there.
But sometimes publicly, that can be unhelpful, can't it, when you get that? But you're saying a private bit of approbation, a private bit of support. What gives you that little zhoosh of confidence?
Definitely, because you are looking. And that's where you tend to make, I think, rash decisions and wrong decisions as well. And we stuck to our principles. And then I think as well, the nice thing is the players never lost faith as well, which is very important. There's this phrase, which I don't particularly like in football, where people say, oh, you lose the dressing room and all that. I don't quite know what that means at times, but all the players were with us. And that performance against Port Vale, coming off the rubbish at Northampton 3 days earlier, was exceptional in everything about it. And I think we knew from that point that we were going to be okay.
How did it affect you personally, just out of curiosity? Because, again, very experienced, but I mean, is it hard not to bring it home? Is it hard not for it not to be in your head all the time as you're trying to watch you go on your walk with your dog or watching your box set or whatever it is?
You can't watch things because you watch them, but you don't watch them. And you sit there and you watch TV and you watch 15 minutes and my wife said something about this happened and you've no idea what happened. it's there, but you can't take it in. And the only respite, seriously, sometimes is walking the dog, where you take your phone, but you turn that off at times, and just to go and get an hour clear thinking time is absolutely vital. But it affects you personally, professionally, in every single way.
Yeah, somebody said to me that the shower is the best place for thinking, that that's where the most of those little sort of click moments or eureka moments of revelation come to you.
I find walking the dog.
Right, fine. And I suddenly realised we were heading into the territory of Nigel Clough's Guide to Showering. I thought, no.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
A 5-minute shower a day is not really enough to get those, you know, sort of long sort of thoughts that you need and that sort of thing. And the deep thinking, you know, when you're out for an hour or so walking with the dog and you're in the fresh air as well. I think all those things help.
Yeah. As you've gone through this winning run, unbeaten run, but mainly winning run, have you seen players that were once a sort of dried little withering flower suddenly start to perk up and spring back into life? Because that must be a lovely feeling as well as a manager, isn't it, to see players enliven like that?
The whole place becomes alive when you go in training. When you've won on a Saturday, the place is it's a different place of work on the Monday morning, and that transfers into matches and so on from there. And players are now, they forget, they do things when they're winning and they're confident, they do things naturally. And when you stop doing that, then you stop to think, especially goal scorers and things like that, I think that's when you have a problem. But now they're back to doing it. Training has improved. The standard in the last couple of months has been excellent. We've noticed a big improvement on the training pitch. And once again, that's transferred onto the pitch on a Saturday afternoon.
As life lessons and professional lessons go, is this a pretty big one? You know, you can get through something like this, both for you and for the boys as well.
Definitely, but I think you need to be given the opportunity, and that's the most important thing. The problem with a lot of, I think, managers, when they have a run like this, they get the sack, so they never get the opportunity to get through it, so you don't really know what to do. We've had some over 20-odd years now, some pretty poor runs. Don't know statistically this was the worst, but it might have been. So you do build up a little bit of resistance or whatever it is that you need to deal with it to get through it. But the players know as well. We kept saying to the players, you know, everything's going against us, stick with it. And also every team will have a bad run, not as bad as we had probably, but every team will have a bad run. We're having ours now. All the rubbish is going against us now and it will change.
You must feel great right now, don't you? To hear that statistic, 10 wins out of 11 matches.
Yeah, we didn't think it would. We certainly, you know, a few weeks ago, never thought we'd be sitting here with anything like that. Fixtures have been, we've lost a couple like everybody over the Christmas period. So I think we're going to play sort of one in. We played on the 11th against Salford. We play Boxing Day, Hartlepool, and then we're going to hopefully play Middlesbrough Saturday. So that's like one in a month nearly, yeah. Which isn't ideal. And quite a few to fit in.
Yeah. Yeah, mentioning the FA Cup game against Borough there, is that an unwelcome distraction? Would you rather be concentrating on the league, or is it a nice intrusion?
It's lovely intrusion. Never mind those. We've got a lovely home draw in the FA Cup, and we can't wait. Everybody's looking forward to it. I think we're going to get a good crowd. I think the Borough will sell out as well there, and we can't wait for it. To get to this, we've had a lot of away draws. You know, we've been away at Sunderland, we've been away at Doncaster. I think to get a home draw, people say, oh, it's not the most glamorous tie in the world, you know, it's not one of the top six, the Man U's, Man City, Chelsea's and all that. It's a glamorous one for us. We're delighted with the draw. Know how it's going to be tough, but it's one of those. Let's have a go. And whatever you're doing in the league, I think you've always got a little bit of room there for a cup run.
Yeah. There's that nice personal connection there, isn't there? Of course, you just reminded me with your win at Sunderland of your birthplace, and obviously yeah. Where your old man, unfortunately's career was ended by injury. But I mean, listen, I think most listeners know I'm a Borough fan. 197 goals in 213 appearances. 197 in 213. That is ridiculous, is it not, Nigel?
It is, because he then continued at Sunderland to get the 250 as well and scored the requisite number there as well to make it one of the quickest 250 league goals. So it is, but he never mentioned it very often as well, so that was good.
Have you still got some... I know a lot of Pop's siblings, sadly, are no longer with us. Have you still got a few relatives, though, in Middlesbrough? Have you been getting a few requests for tickets this week and things?
Yes, yeah, but they want to go in the Middlesbrough end.
Right. Yeah, are you able to facilitate, or do you make them go? Are you make them go in a firm Mansfield?
Hopefully we've sorted them out in the Borough end where they'll feel more comfortable. But as I say, it'll be a good atmosphere. And yeah, we still get up there now and again. And I think we went up Rosebery Topping last year, which was always lovely and a lovely experience. So yeah, we still get up there now and again.
Yeah, I bet the dog was not thanking you for that walk, that final ledge to get to the very top of Rosebery Topping. Look it up, folks. Sadly, I have a, believe it or not, I have an uncle who did a sponsored walk on behalf of the British Heart Foundation. This was about three, 4 decades ago. I didn't really know him very well, but he managed to then die on top of a heart attack, having just done that.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's some way to go, isn't it? I'm not making light of this situation, but when you look at it on face value, there's just a bit of something there, isn't there? Nige, have you found a really comfortable home? Obviously, we'll forever associate you with certain clubs and, you know, the legacy of Burton reigns strong. But has this got the potential for a long liaison, having got through that difficult period and with half a season left?
You never know. That's awfully difficult to answer in football. Having got through what we've got through, we hope we're onwards and upwards from this point. But I think football's far too unpredictable to think like that. We're thinking about Middlesbrough, Swindon and Walsall in the next week's fixtures, and that's it after that, literally. And I don't think you can look much further than that.
Yeah. Great to talk to you. Final question. When are you taking your Christmas decorations down, mate?
Well, we've still got another night. It's not the sixth night here, whatever, 12th, is it yet? It's not the sixth, so we've still got it. They'll come down tomorrow. They'll be down in time, don't worry. My wife is very superstitious like that, and she'll be packing them away, and I will be carrying the boxes upstairs, probably.
I'm glad to know you're keeping busy in and around getting ready for that cup game. Great to talk to you, and it goes without saying, well done getting through that tough, tough old period. Nice to talk to you, Nige.
Glenn, thank you.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, in their first season as an EFL club, Sutton United currently occupy one of the automatic promotion places. Stevenage, hovering just above the relegation zone, have already been busy in the transfer market, bringing in three. And three Oldham Athletic supporters who were barred for promoting their dislike of the club have had their three-year bans rescinded on appeal. There's a whole raft of Sky Bet League 2 fixtures this coming weekend. Probably the pick is Tranmere have won their last five against Scunthorpe, which means a return to Prenton Park for Keith Hill. And then in midweek, Mansfield return to league action. They're currently ninth and they entertain fifth place Swindon Town. That's it for this first episode of 2022. A big thank you to Nigel Clough and to Paul Heckingbottom. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.